I think this is probably the most important lesson of any of the ones we've come across yet, and I tend to actually have some slides that back this, but we won't bother about that, we'll just talk. One of the other conferences that I attend pretty regularly is FOSS.in, which was formerly known as Linux Bangalore, and it takes place in, surprise, Bangalore, India. And 2 years ago, when they renamed the conference, there was quite a crowd of KDE developers at the same time there were a crowd of GNOME developers. And one of the workshop boffy sort of sessions was about mail clients. And in the room, and I can't remember whether it was Till Adams, one of the original KMail authors who was talking, or whether it was Shreyas Srinivasan, who is one of the, at the time, evolution hackers who was actually up on the stage. But it turned into this two-way dialogue. It might have been questions afterwards. That very quickly they realized that they were both attacking the same problems. And we're both really tired of doing so. And so it didn't take very long before the KMail hackers and the evolution hackers were like, you know what, our lives would be immeasurably better if we could just find a way to push the stack together and share the same infrastructure. I mean, it seems sensible, but when you think about the usual people that seem to think that, you know, like Vi user, who's a Vi user? Hands up. Who's an Emacs user? Anyone who's sitting beside the other, start hitting them. Right? So, you know, there are KDE people in the room presently. That's good. And it's not here because they're here to mock us, and it's not here because we're here to mock them, right? We are two projects that are working in a similar space, solving similar problems, and the competition helps both to excel and exceed. That said, where there's overlap between them is room for collaboration, and Lord knows every single aspect of every single project of every single major project constellation is understaffed, and so if we can find a way to share code, well, for example, that's what Free Desktop is about. So out of this conversation came an architecture which was going to be the solution of how these two communities were going to share mail and contact and messaging and presence infrastructure. Well, this is where reality sets in, is two things happened. One is that the KDE guys went and started working on it. And the second thing that happened was that Shreyas got laid off by Novell. And so, unfortunately, by the time I'd noticed what was happening, and by the time anybody else noticed what was going on, the KDE guys had proceeded down the direction of ripping apart their infrastructure and creating this new stack, and the GNOME guys were completely ignoring it. I'm a bit disappointed about that, and so one of my aims at the moment is to try and find a way to help GNOME leverage off the stack. It's called Akonadi, A-K-O-N-A-D-I. Lots of K's, of course, because they did it first. But, and if you go to, I believe, pim.kde.org, thank you, Aaron, you'll see details about it. I will get some links posted around to the conference list with the details. I had a couple backing slides, but we're not going to worry about that right now. Rather than talking about Akonadi, the thing was is that 2 years later, and now at FOSS.in a couple months ago, or early December, Till Adams was back with Vooter, last name is? Vooter? Right, so he doesn't know his last name either. Anyway, the one person that I do know is Till Adams. Till's awesome. Till and his compatriot Vooter presented at FOSS.in 2 years later the results of their work to create this infrastructure. Now, this is amazing. One of the things that they deliberately kept the dependencies really low. Even more amazing, guys, and for all of those of you that are GNOME partisans, KDE stands on glib. They use the glib main loop now in KDE 4. This is amazing. The fact that the KDE guys, you know, like we're all going to Vi Emacs punch up each other, right, are using what would traditionally have been thought of a piece of the GNOME infrastructure is fantastic. I suspect that the reality of this is that that's an olive branch that they're going to use to club us over the head to justify us having to use something of theirs. But we'll see how that ends up. But actually what that is a reality is that people have realized that glib has become a generic piece of the infrastructure. It's on every system, so they might as well use it. Why have their own main loop? This opens up all kinds of integration possibilities, right? And so that's one piece of it. A second piece is that this thing uses dbus for messaging. The third side of it is that it is a client-server type architecture. They've created a daemon, which is what then talks over the net to all the various servers, whether it's groupware. The real trouble here is groupware. Mail is complicated and difficult to work with, but it's still a relatively well-specified protocol. But try to talk to Novell's GroupWell server, try to talk to Exchange, try to talk to any of the major back ends, and they all have protocols that more or less aren't specified and that evolve a lot, and it's keeping up with that crap, which is what's proved so difficult. And so the biggest part about this that I want to tell you about, though, isn't about the fact that there's a server that talks about DBus to some client. Isn't the fact that they've got KDE libraries for it now and have released it. I mean, they actually showed a mail client in 30 lines because they had a widget that would list based on their interfaces and da-da-da-da-da. The obvious challenge for the GNOME people is to come up with a set of matching interfaces in G-object terms so that we can use the same stack. And that's going to be work ahead. But that's not what I wanted to talk about either. The really amazing part of this story is that Till and some of the other colleagues that were working on KML have been working on it for 5+ years. They were bored. Worse than being bored, they were burned out, right? And one of the biggest problems in free software across the stack is that you get people to get involved in a project and they get sucked in. They're really enthusiastic for a while, but then, like it or not, they are irreplaceable in the sense that if they stop working on it, it'll all float away. And then suddenly you go from being something that you want to work on to something you feel pressured you have to work on and you can't let go. And that's what leads to burnout, which is why, I mean, there's lots of reasons why many projects are abandoned, but a lot of really good projects start to suffer late in the cycle when the original maintainer team or a maintainer team fades to black because they're done. They want to move on. And what the project that you were so proud of becomes a lemon or something heavy around your neck. And you just can't, an albatross you can't get rid of. What's amazing about the story, and the last thing I just wanted to mention this morning, is that what Till and his friends did is they realized we have spent 5 years developing expertise on how to build mail infrastructure and contacts infrastructure. And rather than writing the new mail client for KDE 4, they built the library that incorporates all their knowledge, that everything they know about mail systems design. And then in that library, they've worked for 2 years to build everything they know into this library so someone else can write the mail client. But it was a way for them to re-engage and get excited and to capture their work. And rather than feeling all their work, which is somewhere stuffed in KMail, being lost, because they certainly don't want to work on KMail anymore, they found a way to re-engage and get excited about passing their knowledge on to the future. And that's a really inspiring story. I think that's I can't imagine it's unique in free software land, but it's certainly novel enough for me to be really excited about it. And it's, for anybody in the room who's an experienced hacker who's been working on a project for a while, you know, something to think about is that if you're getting towards the end of lifespan and you know, wanting to move on some way else, perhaps this is a way to continue to contribute without being burned out. That's what I have to say. Really beyond that, like I said, the URL was pim.kde.org/akinati. They did their release about a month ago and have done none of the marketing and website stuff. So other than I could have gotten up here and shown you their slide deck, but it wasn't, you know, that's not going to accomplish anything. And neither is that URL terribly impressive. But I just want to mention the name of this project and the fantastic accomplishment that these guys have pulled off and hope that we in the GNOME community can find a way to leverage it. Aaron, did you want to add anything to that? Did I miss anything?
Just that anybody who'd like to get involved would be more than welcome to. I mean, one of the challenges we have, right, in the free software desktop is meeting user expectations versus meeting our own expectations. And we also have the ability to really out-innovate pretty much anyone else when we work together. And that's our strength, is being able to pervasively implement features. And groupware has been traditionally a very hard nut to crack because it's so complicated. But when you have something like Akinati in the back end, we can really push out messaging, email, and contacts throughout all of our software, and we can see it pop up in places that we would never expect. So I'm really hoping that people do take advantage of the work that's happening in Akinati. The good news with it as well is that it's funded development these days, so we've got people that are also paid to pay attention to it. So it's kind of, we've got a good foundation for the future. And yeah, the guys Till and Gunter and all the other guys at KDAB as well, the company that's providing a lot of the funding for it at the moment, are very open to working with pretty much anybody on any platform. I know some of the guys hack on Mac OS X, some of the guys hack on Windows, some of the guys hack on Linux, some of the guys, you know, they work with all sorts of toolkits and whatnot. So if you're looking for an interesting cross-pollination project, it's pretty hard to find better people than that to work with, I think. So.
I'm not sure that I can answer any questions, but I can at least, you know, I can take a stab at it.
Point you in the right. I'm not sure if I can answer any questions, but if you do have any, I can try my best. Good. No questions. That's all.
So thank you for doing an early impromptu lightning talk. Luckily, Martin actually works on campus, so he's wandering over right now. But where are the OLPCs at the moment? There, I've passed a couple around. There's one over there and over there. You guys can see each other on the network neighborhood thing? Cool. So Martin's going to be talking about OLPC stuff, but we have Jim Geddes from the One Laptop Per Child project here as well. So while we're waiting for Martin to get here, does anyone have questions about OLPC that they want to ask? The question was, what's the minimum order that a country or organization can put in for OLPCs?
There is this give one, get one kind of program that's now over, at least for the moment, in the United States. But there's also a give many thing, so if you want to help donate a lot of machines to kids who need it, that's open. In terms of other ways of getting your own hands on the machine, we have a developers program, which we anticipate going forward will be a substantial number of machines per month. That's much higher than I was able to do in the long term and with prototypes. Those prototypes, even on the scale of the number we built, are relatively scarce commodities. That'll probably take another month or two to get set up. It needs some automation. And also, we have to recover from the fact that the company who was taking orders for us for G1 dropped a lot of orders on the floor. And so we have to figure out how to get those built right now. So there's not a simple answer to that. A piece of it depends upon, well, what is the long-term thing? We can't, substantial deployments take a lot of time and effort. And so, the amount we can afford to do just on one-off, one-at-a-time basis is limited. So there's not a simple answer, but in terms of this community getting your hands on machines, that's becoming much easier. Not that it was hard to do before if you were motivated. I basically asked for like a one sheet of paper amount of information from people, and if they were proposing to do anything reasonable, we'd get them hardware. But you'll see a lot more machines very, very soon.
And Pierre mentioned this in the education mini-conf yesterday. There's an organization that's being born as we speak called OLPC Australia. And part of the creation of that organization is to make OLPCs more available to Australian organizations. And it also has a mission to create a network of similar organizations in the South Pacific region. So we can share learning tools and OLPCs amongst all of the nearby South Pacific nations. So hopefully that will sort of expand the reach of OLPC down here. We're on. So I will now pass to Martin, who's going to talk about OLPC. There are two OLPCs running around the room, so if you want to tell people... Oh, there's four now. Excellent, rock and roll. So you have demoable bits. that people can fat finger over there. Yeah. So I'll now pass to you.
Okay. Well, thanks, Jeff. I apologize for not being here. There was a university thing on about information futures, and it seemed appropriate that I go to that. And there was someone there saying that we would all live in Second Life in 10 years and universities would... sort of become this amorphous blob without actually people meeting one another. I found that rather hard to believe. So anyway, what happened there? Didn't do anything. It's weird. Did it turn itself off somehow? I enough to go down and off. This driver changed in Fedora 8.
You were up there for a moment ago.
Yeah. I think I might have to log out again. So hopefully it won't switch me off. Back up.
What you might want to do is run X-Render.
Yeah, it might be the... Okay.
Because I think it's saving the setup.
Doesn't like the screen. Where have I got that? Up here. Is something safe. You back up here?
X-Render.
Yeah, I just did. It'll come back at the right resolution. One more time. I love ATI. Okay. All right. What's the command line for OpenOffice presentation? Impress? Ah, lovely.
I like not using the first button.
That would go well. Okay. All right, oh, wrong one. Okay, at last. Okay, so I'm not going to talk much about a lot of this fantastic technology because there are people in the audience who know far more about it than I do. I thought I'd just throw some of these ideas out there because there's no doubt that Sugar is definitely new and innovative and we have the opportunity to learn a lot from it. So it's the innovative framework and UI for the One Laptop per Child project. It has a profound focus on collaboration, connectivity and ease of use. A lot of the assumptions that are built into GNOME and to every other desktop have been looked at in detail in Sugar, and a new UI has basically evolved from that relook. So in particular, the Sugar Journal provides a very interesting alternative to the file metaphor. So the file metaphor is something that we've become very, very used to over the last 20 years. But it itself assumes something like an office environment to begin with. And if you're a child who's never worked in an office environment, it's not the least bit obvious that it's not the least bit obvious that this is the right way to go. I'll talk a bit about what I know a lot about, libabbyword, abbywidget, and abbycollab. Telepathy, which provides peer-to-peer connectivity and presence service, which is used for the Sugar system to find peers around them, and a powerful clipboard handler. So these are things that struck me as being potentially useful for GNOME, but certainly there are other technologies there, and other people might have other ideas about what we might want to look at reusing. So the first thing about sugar is the instant connections. I mean, the connections are everywhere. If you just go to the, it's sort of floating around there, and you click on this little icon up here, you see a view of all of the different laptops that are accessible to you. Now, this is a really, really innovative feature. I mean, we had a great presentation before about Conduit, about how you could transfer files between different people and different pieces of information. And one of the things that are difficult in an organization like mine, which is fully, you know, fully networked, fully collaborative as much as possible, is it's actually hard to find people. Whereas this nice little idea of just clicking on this icon and suddenly I can see people color-coded, and if I mouse over these color-coded people, I know who they are. So I could immediately, for example, launch into a chat session with them. I could immediately launch into a quick question, or I could say, share my document with that person and immediately start collaborating on the presentation of that document. So for this to work, I think requires telepathy, a Bahi, and the telepathy presence service. But the UI for this is in itself very innovative. And I think that this is an interesting idea that we might want to go forward with. And this, the basic idea of having this connectivity immediately obvious right throughout the whole desktop is a really great idea. And that's something that I think GNOME could use if we can find a way to make this presentable without being condescending to people who are used to the file metaphor. Because we don't want to throw away our current existing base. We got enough flack from that when we went to GNOME 2 for basically dumbing down stuff. Journal. It's a different way to organize your work. Now, this is becoming more and more obvious to me as Google gets better and better. I have this enormous list of bookmarks, which aren't particularly well categorized. But as it turns out, I find them rather not particularly useful. It's easier for me to type stuff into Google and find it on the internet than it is for me to remember where I've organized my stuff in my bookmarks. And in a similar way, files on our desktop, I have exactly the same problem with files on my desktop. So the journal provides a different way to approach this problem. How do you find what it is you're working on? And basically, it just orders things. When was the last time you activated something? So it tells you when this was, and tells you what the thing was, the document was that you did that time ago. This is an earlier version. It doesn't show you the nice little snapshot, image snapshot that it does now. So speaking to Tommy Yu, we could potentially look at making this journal view a new view of Nautilus, for example. So it might be possible, well, it is possible, for Nautilus to have another view, not only icons and list, but maybe journal. And that's something that could be immediately, well, relatively quickly implemented. And we could find things by when we last accessed them. One of the other neat things that's in Sugar is the clipboard. It's not one of the things that people talk much about, but every time you copy something and to your clipboard, it actually goes up here on the frame around the Sugar interface. And then if you mouse over this thing, you find out what it was, the contents of that clipboard. So instead of just having the most recent thing on your X clipboard, you actually have this this history and this list. Of course, Sugar has this other nice view of all of your friends that you've connected to on the elsewhere on the system. So it seemed to me that maybe we could run with this idea a bit, perhaps not have the whole frame around a view the way that Sugar does, but maybe have some obvious application that says you click on it and it gives you a list of things that got copied to the clipboard. Now, we've had various attempts to make clipboard managers over the years, and they haven't really amounted to much, but maybe someone could run with this and actually turn this into something that sticks around and stays with us for the course of time, over the course of time. So then there's the whole telepathy framework, which is basically encapsulated communication. So the idea of telepathy is that all of the communications and connections are basically encapsulated in a series of libraries that are accessed via DBus or have the same sort of UI or API as DBus, so that once you learn DBus, you learn how to use telepathy. So telepathy provides a number of different services already, including streaming services, chat services, file transfer services. And amongst these are Link Local XMP, XMPP, which is basically a local Java server, but it's not a Java server as such. You can use the XMPP protocol, which is what's used by Java, to talk directly to somebody else without having to go through a server. So that's incredibly useful for Sugar. In fact, it's necessary for Sugar because in many environments there is no server available. But it also allows streams, which allow direct point-to-point video conferencing and remote execution via DBus. So this is sort of what Corba almost always promised us but never delivered. Still not sure about how this will actually work and whether people will end up using remote execution, but it's available. I don't actually know that much more about telepathy, so if there are experts in the audience, I'd love them to tell us more about that. So the stuff that I know most about is libabbyword and abbywidget. So what this provides is a powerful rich text canvas that you can embed in any application that you wish. So we originally wrote abbywidget for Bonobo, but nobody ever used Bonobo. So in the end, when Sugar came about, we actually embedded this widget inside a library build of abbyword, so that if you just link against this library, you get abbywidget, and then you can use this as you would any other GTK container. So it's extremely flexible and a powerful rich text widget with built-in collaboration. So all of the plugins that you would use for abbyword are available, and here's a little Python program that is about 100 lines of, it's about 200 lines of Python with a totally different toolbar down the side here and nothing else. So it's just like any other GTK container widget. Here's the code for embedding it in any other sort of system, any other sort of GTK window. Create a GTK window, do your normal sizing and show it. Create an HBox, and then just create the abbyword canvas, and then pack it in. There, HBox add abbyword canvas and show it. And then there it is. And you have all of the features of abbyword that you can connect as you wish. And we've gone to a lot of effort to expose all of the interactions with abbywidget through Python because we needed to for Sugar. But it's there for other people if they wish to use it. Not only that, we have a whole set of interesting signals that come out of abbywidget that you can connect to. So you can put together your own application that changes. If you need to know if the style name changes, if the font family, the caret moves into a different font, you get a signal. If the font size changes, if you've selected text, images are selected, all of these sort of things are available as well to, you know, basically build your application with. So we needed all of this for Write, and having done it for Write, it's now available for anybody else who's interested. And I've actually gone to the work of putting some documentation together, and there it is there. So that's basically all I have to say. As I said before, there are many people in the audience who know a lot more about this than a lot of these technologies than I do. So I just sort of throw it open to discussion at this point. So anybody want to say anything? Is there something I missed out of Sugar that might be good, or is it just crazy to even think about putting this child's UI answer known. Yeah?
Just from a user interface question. I noticed that the abbyword widget had Tango style icons, but the rest of the Sugar widget doesn't. And I haven't really looked much into Sugar, but is that consistent, or does the abbyword stuff adopt Sugar's icons later on for
Sugar uses its own icons, and Write uses the Sugar icons. So AbbeyWord just took what was available on the desktop via Tank. That was my thing.
All right, so it grabs it from your default thing.
Yeah.
All right, okay. So that was just like for development hack.
Yeah, this is just a hack that, right, to show you that you could do this in a few hundred lines of Python. So adding every extra button there adds about 10 lines of Python once you add connections and signals. But it's basically work to write one for every icon. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, you've got a grayscale screen, some of the lines on the color screen. If the color choice is wrong, then your colors, you know, you end up with the same breakpoint, and you have no contrast.
I mean, from just reading around the place, it appears that there's some push from Calabra, the company behind Telepathy, to push this onto GNOME. Well, push this into GNOME, that's perhaps the better way to put it. I really like this idea of having a clipboard manager that actually works. Yep?
The collaboration part there.
Yep.
Is that like an actively developed sub-project within AbbeyWord?
Oh, yeah, that's been our focus for the last 2 years.
Well, so are you looking, or are you interested in
not one application, and what a word processor wants and needs to coordinate state is very different than a chat program. It's very different than sharing images and camera activity. So it depends what you're doing, whether or not it's going to be straightforward to build interoperability between different instances or different classes of applications.
I don't think that's even extraordinarily for such a collaboration would even. I'd be happy with the document creation, thing. I don't think you have to tie in necessarily IRC application and these other class of apps. We could just do it for something that was applicable and useful for word processors, spreadsheets, presentation programs, which are generally under the hood semantically related. But if we take it even more than that, that'd be, then we're entering wet dreamland, but even just getting the Office Suite kind of stuff together would be.
Okay, I have a whole presentation I'm going to give tomorrow about AbbeyCollab and the collaboration. It's very, very actively developed. We see it very much as the future of AbbeyWord. But it's not the least bit obvious how you would make anything else understand it. And unless everybody else adopts what we do, I can't see it actually going much beyond AbbeyWord. The connection part we can do, I think. the protocol and the presence part we can share. But I can give the presentation now about why it's very difficult to interoperate, say, with OpenOffice or even Gobi, because it really required some deep changes in how AbbeyWord worked in order to make this work.
Well, that's when you're pushing the application developer side, right? That we can make something that they can choose to use that kind of abstracts the hardware and actual collaboration, and then say, okay, as the application developers, you not do those deep changes to make it work. I think that's an acceptable point. But I guess the question is, is there interest in taking the collaboration work people are doing in AbbeyWord and making it generally accessible with free software?
Well, I should make my presentation tomorrow and you can judge.
I'll be there.
Okay.
And I shall judge for you.
One thing that really struck me, especially from the Conduit talk, is how useful it is to have this presence feature globally available. I mean, it really makes the collaboration that's possible with the XOs possible. Without it, you just couldn't do it. And that just in itself is a really neat thing. I mean, my use case would be I bring my laptop into work and plug it into the network, and I want my desktop to immediately see it so that I can just do this conduit trick and transfer synchronized files across. That would be nice. Or, just to click on this yellow icon here and know that that's, Leo Bruin, who lives on level 2, and I want to open a quick little chat with him, or even a quick little conversation with him. That would be really useful. And basically, it's not something that any desktop provides now, except for sugar.
So when you say it was a predominantly rich heap space widget, does that mean the import export stuff that everything you can do for a simple export type of that space as well? Like,
yeah, it's all there. Everything's there, including doing snapshots of documents. So you can take a PNG image of a document with this thing. So yeah, I could use it for a Nautilus thumbnailer, for example. So you could have thumbnails of all of your OpenOffice documents using AbbeyWord. So, you know, just regard near term, I would imagine that journal and telepathy thing, and clipboard actually, are all things that could be done relatively quickly. And I've talked to my colleagues in the AbbeyWord project, and although we'll never make libAbbeyWord API stable, we will make AbbeyWidget API stable, and even ABI stable. Over a development cycle, but we won't make the whole thing stable, but we can make the widget stable. Okay, maybe have an early lunch then. Thanks, folks.